Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoyed the program. Hi there and welcome. Well, it was Voltaire who famously said, if God did not exist, it would be necessary to invent him. Is God any longer necessary? A few years ago, it was fashionable to talk about faith without religion, the desire for a personal spirituality free from the conventions of institutional religion. Well, these days, some are suggesting quite the opposite, that what we need as a community are communal rites and rituals independent of any necessary belief in a higher power. We need the ties that bind more than we need the great tire of the knot. Well, this week on the Gold Coast, the Australian chapter of an organisation called Sea of Faith is conducting a national conference concerned with just these questions. In countries like Australia, traditional religiosity has been under challenge for some time, not just from the aggressive scientism of the new atheists, but from a broader multicultural exposure to different faith traditions, finding they're not so different from us after all. As difference between Protestants and Catholics fell a generation ago, so now differences between differing faith traditions are softening, as are the differences between believers and non-believers. So, where to for the life of faith? That's our discussion this evening, and in a few moments we'll be joined by a panel to take up the cudgels. Where is God? Whilst belief in God with a capital G declines, the need for an overarching narrative embracing spirituality, ethics and morality shows no sign of decreasing. And in many ways, if the polarisation of our politics is any indication, seems a need that's more acute than ever. Welcome into the studio this evening, the Reverend Dr. Noel Preston, lecturer and public ethicist. Noel Preston, welcome to you.
Good evening, John.
And in our Brisbane studios with Noel Preston, the Reverend Dr. Stephen Ogden, author and Dean of St. Francis College in Brisbane. Stephen, good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
And in our Sydney studios, somebody who, for a time in his life, graced these studios on more than one occasion, the Reverend Dr. David Milliken, recently retired from the Uniting Church and former head of religious programs at the ABC. David, thanks for joining us. Let me start. Noel Preston, the Sea of Faith is an organisation whose conference you're participating in this week. The Sea of Faith is an organisation that seems to reflect this sense of people needing a spirituality yet not really sure of the ultimate question of the reality of the old man in the sky.
Well, I can't actually speak for the Sea of Faith, and I don't think anyone can probably. It's that kind of network and gathering, and the conference was evidence of this. But yes, I think it attracts people who are exploring on the edge of faith, and certainly wouldn't fit into the boxes generally of traditional theism and orthodoxy of a Christian or any other religious persuasion.
Can you have a religion or without having a God figure, an entity at whom one's faith is directed? I guess that's the puzzling question for most people.
Sure. Yeah, I think you can, actually. I mean, I don't think religion is necessarily tied to an external being that might be called God, though in fact historically and in most cultures that has been the case. What some would say, and I'm got some sympathy for this view, is that you could have religiousness if not religion.
Stephen Ogden, the question is, do we need it?
Well, I think part of the problem is the problem with the word God. Some of those discussions, not of course present one, we're locked into an either-or situation between the grumpy old man in the sky or nothing, and really the former legacy carries a lot of baggage with it. Now, I actually think that one of the good things that's happening, and even within traditional parishes, there are a lot of people really exploring their faith and their understanding of spirituality, and intuitively, they've been able to transcend the grumpy old man in the sky anyway. Life's taught them that. And intuitively they affirm a God, but but they're not so dogmatic about being able to describe the attributes of that God. They don't feel that they have to speak for that God. And so often things like the tradition, the scriptures and the symbols do the talking for them. So often theologians catch up with praxis, and I think in some ways people in parishes and groups like the Sea of Faith are doing some important exploration.
David Milliken, it is the case, and you're one who 30 years ago started asking these questions with a television series you made for the ABC, looking at religion in Australia, that in some ways there is a sense of spirituality around that is uncomfortable with institutional religion and doctrines, and that seems to have grown over the past 30 years. It was there when you did that series all those years ago, but it seems to be people are more comfortable in that language these days. What's happened to institutional religion?
Well, I mean, that series I did, asked the question, is it possible that we can find in Australia our own voice so that we are expressing an Australian spirituality? And I went out into the bush and there is an intense spirituality about the Australian landscape, which is and our history lends to us a whole new understanding about our relationship to the cosmos and to suffering. And so
a number
on.
Of the people you spoke to weren't so convinced about the traditional idea of God, though, were they?
That's true. That's true. I mean, once you start exploring your own spirituality, then your image of God is going to change. That's inevitable. And I was hoping that we might get a sort of discussion so that we would sort of find our own voice here in Australia. But it didn't really happen. And now, you know, Australian Christianity is more divided than it's ever been.
And it's divided along what lines?
Well, it's interesting. It's not the old sort of vertical divisions between different denominations and so forth. They are horizontal divisions within denominations themselves. And it's the difference, like the difference between the Sydney Anglicans and the rest of Anglicanism in Australia is profound. And in my church, the charismatic movement and other conservative movements are showing signs of splitting away. So it's that sort of division.
It's the division between old-time religion, in a sense, and a more sort of liberal version.
I mean, well, look, we've come through the great liberal experiment, really, where there was this profound sense of uncertainty as to whether or not we could trust what the New Testament was telling us about Jesus, and that was huge in its implications. But I think it's sort of run into the sand, and it's left people with this sort of general sense, well, you know, what do we believe? Well, how are we going to sort of restructure our own faith? And in times like that, you'll get excesses developing, and I think the whole Hillsong phenomena and that charismatic movement is a real search for certainty. If you're uncertain about God, come on Sunday and we'll show you God, mate. You know. So
Stephen Ogden is...
Stephen
Ogden, you're a teacher. Is your sense that our spiritual centre of gravity, if you like, has shifted generally over the last 30 or 40 years?
Well, to be honest, it's very hard to characterise. I mean, if you go on a global perspective, you know, Anglican, Catholic, Orthodox, Protestant, Pentecostal, Liberal, Conservative, Fundamentalist. Mm. The whole thing's so nuanced, and the church is booming in Asia and Africa. In some ways it's declining formally in Europe, not so in America, but even in Europe it's rather than loss of interest, it's diffused. So it's very difficult to generalise. Mm. I guess partly because I'm an optimist. I meet a lot of people, not only now students, but in the street, business people, who actually, I think there are more genuine, personal, integrated kind of experimentation going on now. I don't mean in a trendy, knee-jerk way, but I think there's a real quest out there, and to some degree, it's the problem of the institution, like myself as an Anglican priest. It's our problem to readjust to what's been taking place so that we can hear some of the important questions that are being asked. So I think in some ways there's a very profound and genuine search going on, and in a sense the church, the institutional church, is playing catch-up.
Noel Preston, what do you say to people who say, well, look, if you give up on God, that is an entity called God, all you're really doing is dressing up morality with rites and rituals. You're not really adding anything to
the sort of religion for atheists, yes, line of Ballantyne, yes. For me, and it's a bit like that, the conversation these days, one must clarify, I'm speaking for myself. I'm not really speaking for a party line, but for me, I find in my spiritual heritage still richness and resource that doesn't have to be tied to the elsewhere God idea, the grumpy old man in the sky idea, but rather the God who is love. Love is the core value. Love is the core source of life. That sort of way of talking, and then the richness of that still keeps alive for me in my own spirituality, and I believe this can be so for us all, experiences of what we used to call and still call grace and reconciliation and redemption. But whether this has to be packaged up in a systematic theology headed up with a doctrine of God, no, not at all.
One can conceive of that in a number of traditions. You see it in, say, in Confucianism, in Buddhism, and in other traditions. But Christianity has always been linked not just to an idea of God, but to the idea that somehow God is, that entity called God, is in a relationship with humanity, with us, that has a dimension that is beyond the deist. It's beyond this sort of remote clockmaker in the sky. It is something that has to do with, well, concepts like prayer. What is prayer, Stephen Ogden?
Well, it's funny you should say that. If you look through the tradition, there's a dual aspect. There is this sense in which we attribute agency to God. You know, God can do things. God can act. You know, for some Christians, that is really precious. And so when they hear theism being critiqued, and they feel that God can't do or act, it is really unsettling. But there's also an ancient tradition within Christianity, which is mystical, which is not about doing and acting. And, you know, my favourite story from the Hebrew Scriptures is Moses and the burning bush. And it's a wonderful, iconic story about the presence of God amongst us. But this God can't be put in a box and refuses to be put in a box. So there's this dual side to the tradition, the God who acts and intervenes, but there is this sort of wonderful mystical presence that, you know, the medieval mystics picked up, or the 19th century poets. So it's not as simple sometimes, even when you look back on the tradition.
Yes, well, one can see that even in sort of gospel hymns out of a very evangelical tradition. What's that? Prayer is the soul's sincere desire, uttered or unexpressed, the murmur of a hidden fire that trembles in the breast. Now, you know, you could imagine it almost a Buddhist saying that.
That's great.
Well, what about, oh, love that will not let me go? It's interesting that we go to those sources. There is that tradition, as Stephen said so well, the mystical tradition of the God in all. That speaks to me at this end of my life.
And the greats have talked about it. I mean, really, that, you know, Aquinas built a theology out of that.
Yeah.
It wasn't a sensitive New Ager.
David Millikan, is there not, though, in the traditional Christian structures, something that prayer is something more? There is an interactive element in that spirituality we've just been describing, but prayer is, well, what for you is the essence of the prayer interaction?
look, one of the great gifts that a clergyman has to bring to his congregation are those moments when someone is in crisis and they'll call for you to be part of it, and then you pray with them. And there's something remarkably confirming about that. But what they want, I guess, or what is part of that experience is the belief that you are praying to God, you're praying to someone who is watching the situation, and you pray with the expectation that God will participate in some way, either to resolve the anguish in your soul or actually to heal the person or to change the situation and so forth. And that expectation that God is there is fundamental, I reckon, to that relationship between a pastor and people. And
so it's not just an act of solidarity,
no, it's
mutual
not.
Solidarity.
No, it's not. And I would hate to have to go to people and say, look, I'll pray, but I've got to tell you, I don't think God actually does anything in the world.
Well,
you know, it's...
This is getting to the nub of it.
Yeah,
now.
I think we are.
Here we
and
go.
Look, I know what David's talking about, and that is reality in some situations. But once a week, I spend a day visiting in one of our big hospitals here, visiting in the oncology wards as a volunteer chaplain, and I have to say, that's really dealing with people at their extremities, and I meet few people that I think really want that sort of mediation for them. I think they want directly to feel the presence of love, the presence of comfort, and I find myself needing to be very careful about words. The religious formula don't really work in those situations always, and it may be the case that sometimes I've let down the odd person who expected me to come in with the truth and an absolute certainty and say, you're going to be right now, mate. We've taken it to the Lord. Yeah. But I don't think that many people in our hospital beds and in our society... I'm not so sure, David. You see,
I actually agree with everything you've said, Noel. I do. I'm talking about that special relationship between people who do have that expectation with you. I mean, there is a... Look, in the end, I think we are allies in the sense that what we are asking of people is that they consider the possibility that there is more to life than this consumerist pop culture that people are captured in. And anyone who's out there saying, look, let's think deeper, let's think harder, let's rise above this sort of appalling culture that we're developing in Australia, then let's talk about the other stuff about God later. And that's another fascinating conversation. You know?
Yeah, well, Philip Adams is famously reported, you know, let's not let a little thing like God get in between us. And, you know, there's something in that. And I think that what David has just articulated was very much an assumption and a theme in this Sophia conference we've just had.
I think that we're getting the last 5 minutes. I think this is the real stuff that matters. I mean, some you may have read, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn many years ago.
And wonderful.
There's a section, great, it's an adult's book. There's a section in it where, you know, Huck prays for a fishing line. And he prays and he prays and he prays and he doesn't get a fishing line, no, it's a fishing hook. And he gives up. That's it. He's had it with God and he's had it with prayer. Now, unfortunately, you know, for the big world out there, that's the attitude for prayer. It's about getting a fishing hook or a new bike or a date with a girlfriend. But some of the things that Noel has said, we know that the deepest prayers, and it can often, like you're saying, David, you can be a companion in that, but often the deepest prayers are inarticulate.
Yeah.
And it's often a gesture of surrender.
Yeah.
Not defeat, but things are finished, things are complete, and they can be some of the most holiest moments that any of us encounter.
Indeed.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. We're talking about God. Is God any longer necessary, or is religion any longer
necessary. 1300 800 222 if you wish to join the conversation, and you note that I made a difference between God and religion. 1300 800 222. Our guest in the studio to take your calls, Reverend Dr. Noel Preston, Reverend Dr. Stephen Ogden, and the Reverend Dr. David Milliken, and me, John Cleary, on Sunday nights. Now, here's a little rumination on the topic from a few years ago. While you're giving us a call, have a listen to Paul Stuckey.
Sunday morning, very bright, I read your book by coloured light that came in through the pretty window picture. I visited some houses where they said that you were living, and they talked a lot about you, and they spoke about your giving. They passed a basket with some envelopes. I just had time to write a note, and all it said was, I believe in you. Passing conversations where they mentioned your existence and the fact that you had been replaced by your assistants. The discussion was theology, and when they smiled and turned to me, all that I could say was, I believe in you. Again on Christmas or Thanksgiving, and a bald man said you were dead, but the house would go on living. He recited poetry, and as he saw me stand to leave, he shook his head and said, I dress me up, and while my dad was sleeping, we would walk down to your house without speaking.
On Sunday night, Paul Stuckey, hymn. Our guests in the studio, David Milliken, Noel Preston, and Stephen Ogden. And we're taking your calls, 1300 800 222. Before we do, does religion matter, and why does it matter? Noel Preston, this is of concern to you particularly at the moment.
Well, the short answer to that has to be yes. But why does it matter? In the paper I gave at this conference that is sitting a little bit behind this program, I was trying to examine the question whether there's a 21st century spirituality for humanity. Is there something that can take us beyond our religious history, if you like, and yet be faithful to the best of the traditions, and be a connecting point in the human community? Not talking about any global religion as such, and the guideposts that help me most in that exploration are around our relationship with the earth, the fact that there is this interconnectedness of all life, which is a reality that modern science has certainly established for us, and wasn't quite so present, particularly in Christianity of the last few hundred years. But I think that when we take seriously an ecocentric worldview, and when we take seriously the nature of the processes of life, and when we see that all against some of the great challenges in front of our now globalizing world, it points for me to what I'm calling an eco-spirituality. Now, whether that's a religion or not, I don't know. I don't particularly want to use that label.
But you are suggesting there's some, we need some binding sensibility to hold us together
if we're to take on the great challenges facing the planet, which is in terms of the etymology of the word religion, what we're talking about, I guess. And I am, and I think that the urgency of that is great. And I'm saying a bit more than that, actually. I'm saying that we can't simply address the challenges, the global challenges of our time facing humanity, without exploring and finding and creating through rituals and other communal experiences a spirituality that resources us for the challenges of our time.
David Millikan, some people are suggesting that this is the beginning of a new evangelism, that this gives the church a chance to inject itself back into the world, saying, look, you need to take this holistic vision seriously of a world that God loves and needs to be created, and we need to respond ethically as much as we do scientifically.
Mm. Look, I think a religion has got to deliver three things. It's got to deliver a sort of world view. It's got to assist people to understand what the nature of life is, what can we and so on. It's got to also deliver some sort of ethical guidance. How should I conduct myself sexually? What do I do with my money? How do I react in relation to violence and so forth? And third, I reckon a religion's got to deliver some sort of grasp on salvation. And
what do you mean by salvation?
Well, I mean, in the broader sense, it's got to say this world does not exhaust reality, because we know that this world's stuffed in some ways, in fundamental ways, the history of violence.
That's a way of tying us to the future, tying us to our obligations in the future.
Well, a religion's got to address that issue. What is it? What is happening? And is there some hope? So, Noel's about to start a new religion. You know, I mean, mate, good luck, you know, because we're grappling with our own, you know.
Just before we get into that, that line, hope, Stephen Ogden, plays right into your field as well.
A good segue. I actually think, though, in some ways we can over-finesse this topic, because for a lot of young people who have nothing to do with the church, it's not theology. They'll often come and they'll approach us about weddings and funerals. And they'll want a traditional view of God. They want a loving God. But it's not as fancy or sophisticated as what we think they need. And I think for a lot of young people, the big issues about the church and the institution have more to do with gender and sexuality. They cannot believe the pronouncements from, say, the Cardinal Pell or Archbishop Jensen. They are mystified that those kind of things can be said in this day and age. And for them, hope is when they meet someone from the church or a Christian community that is compassionate, that is inclusive, that is really, really making a difference in people's lives. And that resonates very strongly with young people. They give more credence to the sort of compassion and justice in the world as a source of hope than necessarily theological nuances. I'm not dismissing the theology. I mean, that's my living. But I think for young people, they've got a really good antenna for moral and personal integrity, and what they're seeing in the institution, many of them don't like.
Let's take some calls to John in Rockingham first up. Hello, John. Welcome. What would you like to say?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, John.
As a young boy, I was raised up as a Roman Catholic. And it, by the time I was about age 11, I was so bored out of my skull with religious education, because the one thing that Roman Catholic doctrine taught me was two words: fear God, fear God, fear God, fear God, over and over and over again. It seems to me, as I've gotten older, and I'm 46 now, that there's a big difference between having faith in God and having religion in God, because I've known many honourable, decent, moral people who for 6 days of the week basically do whatever they please, yet when they go to church on Sunday, oh, they're pious, righteous and holy then, aren't they?
I think we got your message, John.
Well put.
Stephen, any reflections?
Look, the bottom line is that the church hasn't got the monopoly on piety, and, you know, the church is really, I mean, we haven't always handled this well, but the church is meant to be for ordinary people, you and me, struggling with things from, you know, dysfunctional families, hoping, anxious, wrestling. That's, you know, that's what the church is made up. And where sometimes we have done ourselves a disservice is when we've presented ourselves as perfect and we've expected that of others. Now, perfection is toxic and has nothing to do with the gospel. So, and there are many people in the church who are, you know, complete ratbags, just as there are some wonderful people who are not in the church. So, you know, the church is not meant to be about perfection in the sense of flawless or pure.
Let's go to Valerie in Coonamble. Hello, Valerie. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
What would you like to say?
Well, I'd like to say that I feel sorry for those people who don't believe there is a God. I just think that it's got me through life very helpfully. He has, or I believe he has. And I think with young people, I think that they just... it's a fashionable thing with some of them to say, well, oh, no, there isn't a God, but I don't believe that they don't believe there is one, if you know what I mean. That sounds a bit Irish, I know, but I'm not Irish. But what I'm saying is that I think we have to encourage the young people. I have a grandson that's just had a new baby. I'm not having any religious names, he said. Guess what he called his baby? Luke. So, you know, I believe that it's just become a bit fashionable with some of them not to believe. But I go down in a taxi to Dubbo for the doctor. And when we go down, this taxi driver, he says, oh, you can never get a park. I said, oh, yes, we'll get one. I just asked the Lord if he was agreeable to us having one. And sure enough, one turns up. And he said, you and your Lord, you.
You must tell me how to do that.
So now I've got him. So when we get the park, he now says, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord.
I was going to say you should franchise Valerie, but although I think that's been done.
Can you do engine repairs as well?
But I've been involved in the church for a long time, and I've been involved in all churches. It doesn't make any difference which church it is. I still help a lot, and I'm... The first time I was one that we organised was the Catholics and the Anglicans got together and had a joint thing with two small schools, and we ran a competition, and it was the best. We formed a committee with all mixed religion, and it was the best committee I've ever worked on. The nuns got a dispensation from the bishop to put on a party at the convent.
They were allowed to join you,
Protestants. They were allowed to stay up till midnight.
Sounds good.
Good on you, Valerie. Thanks for your call. That's Valerie in Coonamble. And Valerie would be reflecting a generational of Australians who, for the church has had to endure a lot of trashing over recent years, probably for good and proper reasons. But Valerie reflects something else that's still strong there instinctively with people about the church as community, David.
Belonging.
Yeah, well, that's the church of my parentage, you know. That I was brought up in it, and it formed a lot of my social life. I learnt to sing. I learnt to think about big things, and then there were some fabulous looking girls, in the youth group too. So it was, but
nothing's replaced that, has it?
No, not really. In society. No, not football clubs or political clubs. No, there's not.
And that coupled with at least the potential for that deeper reflective. Relationship and experience, addressing some of the big questions. What I liked about Valerie's story, though, in a way, is a simple trust in life, really. And I think that's a reality that we need to cultivate. And it's, you know...
That's not what she said. She had a simple trust in God.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, righto.
Well, that's what she said.
I was choosing to interpret a little. I grant you that, David.
let's move on to say hi to Bill in North Melbourne. Bill, hello. How are you?
Not too badly. Bit of a sciatic nerve problem, so
We're not offering to pray over it, Bill, at this stage.
I'm not asking for it.
Ah, you're on the way to being cured.
No, not by a long shot.
Oh, sorry, my friend. Yes, I am.
That's all right. It needs extensive surgery that only highly skilled surgeons can
Okay.
fix. But also, I'm an atheist. I won't go into the merits or argue down. Simply to say that primates show altruism, sharing, caring, concern, without the need to resort to religious deities. Recent studies in with young children who were asked to reward for behaviour. They had a doll partner and are asked to hand out little beads as reward for effort. And it showed that even as a 2- and 3-year-old child, they, without any form of obvious understanding of any religion, could have an empathy and realise that if the doll did more, they would give more beads. And this is in the absence of any form of religion. And it was a wide-ranging study. And so, as an atheist, I don't see a need for asking for outside moral guidance when I understand that it is wrong to hurt people. I simply know that it is wrong to kill, steal, you know, I can have evil thoughts and all those sorts of things. I'm a human being, but I don't need to invoke any form of Judeo-Christian, Islamic, Hindu, because they're all mutually exclusive. But like, okay, I'll stop there. And
yeah, Bill, thank you very much for that. And it raises a very interesting topic, one that's been debated for at least the last couple of hundred years. Can we have morality and ethics without religion? I think it was Kant who famously, with his thoughts about duty and the categorical imperative, suggested, yes, of course we could, but who would ever impel us to encourage us to follow such a system? Noel, is that part of what's important for you in what is there of religion, that it gives us a grounding for morals and ethics?
Well, in fact and in practice, I think it does and it can. I think all the great religious traditions, as has often been said, affirm the golden rule, which is a core plank of morality. But I don't think, in saying that, I'm not saying that one needs a religious faith or a god to be a good person. Definitely not. And we all know that there are good people who, and Bill is certainly probably one of them, who live morally without that. Mm. And really, the point, I think, is that there's something beyond ethics, actually. I say that as someone who's made a living out of teaching ethics. There is something in for the human condition beyond ethics, and it's that something that religious traditions and the experience of spirituality can tap into, perhaps. I mean, how do we cope with our failure to be moral? I mean, David earlier used the phrase, a religion needs to give a grasp on salvation. I wouldn't actually use that phrase, but there's something in what is being said there that I think is important, something beyond ethics. And that's why I want to argue, not for my new religion, but for an eco-spirituality movement in the whole human community in our times.
Stephen Ogden.
Well, as Noel said, it's the beyond ethics. I mean, ethics is a very complicated area and there are various models, but you bring certain baggage and presuppositions to any ethical problem. You bring yourself and there are kind of, you know, they call it a meta-ethic, but there are deeper aspirations in the human person that raise the big questions. And in terms of, you know, the atheist, you know, which is now, the perspective is now very vocal and visible presence. I encourage all my students to grapple with the good atheists like Nietzsche. They should know what the great arguments are, really. And in that way, they learn, I think, to develop a mature and nuanced faith. No one's got the dibs on morality, and no one's got the dibs on, you know, theological correctness. It's about process and being willing to take some risks on it.
What about the sort of ethical perspective of distinctive faith traditions? Like Christianity says, at the heart, we have to recognise that humanity is flawed. And it, whether you call that flawed brokenness or original sin or whatever you call it, it was it Reinhold Niebuhr, Obama's favourite theologian, who said the only demonstrable empirical thing that can be demonstrated about Christianity is the fact of original sin. There's a pretty strong view there that has undergirded much of what people would call Western civilization.
Well, the, you know, we are flawed. I mean, you only have to survey the treatment of women globally, you know, from female circumcision to honour murders to all sorts of things, terrible things happening. So I don't think it's rocket science to say that human beings have a tendency to be flawed. I think the debate within the church, though, is whether or not you can affirm that there's some sort of an inherent goodness
yes.
in a human being.
Yes.
And for me, I think that, you know, we're created in the image of God. There is an inherent goodness, and that's not mutually exclusive to the capacity to make mistakes or errors. People forget that the original sin position came later after the first century with a whole lot of baggage going back to Middle Platonic philosophy of the Gnostics. So look, you know, it's not rocket science. Human beings are flawed, but we're also capable of great and wonderful things and of compassion and generosity of spirit. And I think that the Christian tradition also has a strong commitment to that.
David?
I think one of the most important contributions Christians can make to the contemporary national debate is what we understand to be the nature of human evil. Because there is a huge debate out there, and there are great schools of thought who want to say that there is no such thing as what we Christians think of as sin, as evil, but they want to and the implications of that position in education, in prison reform, in foreign policy is huge.
It relativizes things.
In whatever way, but yeah. and the Christian and we Christians have sort of shied away from talking about this, but it's very important. We have an understanding as to what is going on. Now, we should be clarifying that, and I think we should be participating in the mm-hmm. national debate.
Can I differ a little bit?
Mm.
I think life's a bit messier than that for me. And I find it's about making conversations with people. And, you know, life's very complicated. And I mean, we don't have to apologise for our tradition, but we have to earn people's trust and confidence by entering into a conversation.
And I think also...
No, I'm not suggesting that we go out and tell people they're sinners. I'm talking about at a philosophical level. I mean, what is wrong with human beings? That's the question I'm asking. Now, that question is going to be answered in a whole range of ways. You go out in the New Age world, there's a huge world out there who will say, there's nothing wrong.
Kirstler said there was a ghost in the machine.
That's
the
right, yes. It can be solved.
I think we need to take this stuff and look at it systemically, you know, the structural evil, not just the personal evil.
Indeed, yeah.
I know you're saying that too, David, but I think and we need to ground our strivings for justice and our strivings for sustainability and our strivings for the good life conscious of and aware of the forces at play that collide around individuals who end up in prisons and so on. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you. And that was Reinhold Niebuhr's emphasis too, of course. But he also believed that the human being was capable of responding to agape love as the ultimate norm.
Indeed. I think people need to hear more about hope than sin. I think people have an astute awareness of their own shortcomings, and most people wrestle with low self-esteem and shame. And I think that the great gift or opening for the church is a really positive, spirit-filled message of hope and compassion.
So that we are inclusive. One can, across the era, the exclusiveness that's come into religion, I think, is itself an evil. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got to wind up. We've got a couple of minutes left. The critical question for most people who are the lay people looking at this question would be, ultimately, they would say, religion, going to church, means ultimately a relationship with something other. That's traditionally what religion has meant. David Milliken, you seem to be saying that there is still something vital about that, that is crucial for the whole notion of Christianity to work, to be what it is.
Well, I actually see it as going to the integrity of Christianity, because we claim that it's all about salvation offered to us by Jesus, and that he died and he rose again, and that's fundamental to the whole thing. So we're actually talking about something that we believe happened. Now, that is at stake, because there's a lot of people in the church who are not sure that it did happen. Now, that's fundamental. So yes, my answer is yes, we for 2,000 years, we have related to that person, Jesus, as we see as a part of God.
And that if that is not maintained, then Christianity can no longer, in a sense, call itself...
It becomes something else. And it's something I want to talk with, because, like I said, we're all allies in this fight against this other alternative, which is this sort of cold, steely, consumerist pop culture, which is strangling thought, you know.
Mm. Noel Preston, can you have a vital religion without some central deity at its core?
A vital religion without some deity at its core. I think I can say both yes and no to a question like that. I mean, there has to be a centre and an ultimate value. I'd really like to recap to what David was just saying and say, look, I see myself as part of the Jesus story, and that I think inviting people into the Jesus story is still a relevant thing to do. But I don't necessarily see that as carrying all the baggage that Christianity in pre-modern and modern times found necessary and is expressed in the creeds.
Stephen Ogden, we're going to leave the last word to you. You've got about 40 seconds.
Look, I, in some ways I'm very traditional. I love going to church. I love the bells and smells and Mozart and Sherry. But, you know, I think part of the challenge from my perspective is that from time to time there needs to be a prophetic spirit within the life of the church so that we ourselves critique what's happening and that we get rid of some baggage. And sometimes that movement, that prophetic spirit, comes from the outside. And it might be, you know, a visiting atheist philosopher or, a conference down the Gold Coast. But I think that the great challenge and opportunity for the church is to see this as a time of engagement and for new openness.
We'll have to wind you up there. We've run out of time.
Well,
thank you,
though,
for joining us on Sunday night.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.